Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Ampol Limited FY20 Results Announcement Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Matt Halliday, CEO. Please go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Matt Halliday. I'm the Managing Director and CEO of Ampol Limited. Welcome to our full year 2020 result call. Today, I'll provide an overview of our performance, and I'm joined by our Interim CFO, Jeff Etherington, who will discuss the financial results in more detail. Following the presentation, we will take questions. In the room with Jeff and I, we have JoAnne Taylor, EGM of Retail, Brand and Culture, Brent Merrick, EGM Commercial, and Andrew Brewer, EGM Infrastructure. Starting on slide three, 2020 has been an exceptionally challenging year with severe economic weakness from bushfires, adverse weather, and the COVID-19 pandemic combining to impact customer demand for hydrocarbons and disrupt the markets in which we operate. The lower fuels and infrastructure ex-Lytton result was impacted by the loss of scale through the integrated supply system, with weakness in Australian volumes partially offset by strong growth in international volumes. Lytton refinery earnings were heavily impacted by COVID-19, which saw us adjust our approach to executing the turnaround and inspection and announce our strategic review to determine how to maximize the value of this strategic asset. Finally, on a positive note, convenience retail has delivered a strong result, with volume weakness relating to COVID more than offset by strength in retail fuel margins and improved execution in shop as we progress our retail strategy. Pleasingly, despite a year of significant volatility and uncertainty, we have made excellent progress on delivering the strategic initiatives outlined at our 2019 Investor Day, and I'm proud of how our organization has responded to the challenges we have faced through the year. We successfully completed the property transaction, with the Charter Hall GIC Consortium acquiring a 49% interest in 203 of our core freehold retail property sites, and also executed a 500 million dollar hybrid bond issuance. F&I international EBIT grew by 18%, which puts us on track to deliver our long-term growth target, while strong momentum in convenience retail shop and our successful tender to redevelop four high-volume New South Wales highway sites gives us confidence in our retail strategy. We were also able to deliver on our commitment to release franking credits to shareholders, with a $300 million off-market buyback announced in November and completed in January, further supplemented by a 48-cent per share full-year dividend. Moving to our safety performance now on slide four. The safety of our people and our customers always comes first at Ampol, and I'm extremely pleased with the strong improvement in our safety performance in 2020. The extended turnaround and inspection at Lytton Refinery was completed incident-free, and we have recorded our best process safety result in the last 5 years, which is an excellent achievement. Fuels and infrastructure benefited from targeted personal safety improvement plans to reduce the frequency of injuries such as strains, slips, trips, and falls. Convenience retail safety has also improved significantly due to our focus on behavioural safety and the execution of our retail safety roadmap, driving a reduction in the frequency of low-consequence injuries, especially around manual handling tasks. Slide 5. The financial performance of our integrated business in 2020 was directly impacted by COVID-19-related disruption. F&I ex-Lytton EBIT of $299 million was down 21% on 2019. This result reflects the challenging economic conditions arising from the pandemic, where our Australian volumes were down 17% for the year, driven heavily by aviation, and earnings from the integrated supply chain were impacted by this loss of scale. Lytton delivered an EBIT loss of $145 million, with the refinery heavily impacted by extremely weak refining margin conditions. Lytton was offline for a substantial portion of the year during which we conducted the extended T&I and incurred one-off crude costs to manage committed crude cargoes during the T&I. Convenience retail EBIT of $287 million was up 43% on 2019 as industry retail fuel margins benefited from the fall in the crude oil price, more rational industry behaviour, a recovery in fuel volumes through the second half and growing momentum in the shop. I'd note the convenience retail result was impacted by higher depreciation and amortisation given the $26 million site remediation and dismantling impact, which was partly offset by a half-year benefit from impairments of convenience retail sites. The inference being, as per the guidance on slide 33, that convenience retail D&A is about $15 million higher in the 2020 result than it was in 2019 and again will be in 2021. Our RCOP NPAT of $212 million was down 38% on the 2019 result, and our HCOP result loss of $485 million reflects a $360 million inventory loss from the large move in crude and product prices between periods, as well as a $337 million post-tax loss reflecting significant items. A full breakdown of significant items is provided on slide 24 in the appendix, but with a $312 million post-tax expense booked in the first half of 2020, the additional $25 million net expense is primarily related to a further impairment of $59 million, which Jeff will discuss in more detail shortly. The waterfall chart on slide 6 highlights RCOP EBIT by business unit from 2019 to 2020. RCOP EBIT fell by $206 million during the year, with significant disruption to the global hydrocarbon market, seeing $215 million lower Lytton earnings, $81 million lower F&I ex Lytton earnings, partially offset by $86 million higher convenience retail earnings. Slide 7. COVID-19 materially impacted demand from many of our customers in 2020, and these impacts continue to be felt as various government restrictions remain in place, particularly in relation to international travel. Our Australian wholesale volumes, which includes convenience retail, were down 17% during 2020 as the effects of COVID were felt for 9 months of the year. Jet fuel has experienced the greatest demand destruction, with volumes down 56% on prior period, given the impact of international and domestic travel restrictions and border closures. The recovery in jet fuel demand remains heavily dependent on international travel and freight, with these flights representing over 75% of Ampol's 2019 jet fuel volumes. Our Australian diesel volumes were down 6% on prior period, with continued demand resilience in key B2B customer segments such as mining, but some impact felt during the year in diesel demand from retail customers. Our international fuel volumes were up 36% in 2020 as our trading and shipping team created value from higher third-party sales in volatile market conditions, supported by our expanded international storage arrangements. As always, it is important to note that the third-party volumes can vary significantly from period to period, with these cargoes dependent on market conditions and their contribution to overall integrated value across the supply chain. Convenience retail volumes were down 14% on prior period, with demand improving in the second half of 2020 as government restrictions began to ease, albeit it remains dynamic with the introduction of rapid lockdowns continuing to impact demand year to date. Retail gasoline volumes fell 18% and were more impacted than retail diesel volumes, which fell 9%, with our strong card offering supporting diesel demand on a relative basis. Pleasingly, continued resilience was observed in demand for premium fuels, which represented 51.3% of total convenience retail volumes during the year. Slide 8. We remained focused in 2020 on executing our F&I international growth strategy, with strong organic earnings growth delivered in volatile market conditions. RCOP EBIT of $85 million was up 18% on 2019, with Gull growing volumes by 4% and rolling out 10 new sites, despite strict government travel restrictions. Sea oil volumes also showed resilience despite adverse impacts from government restrictions and added 76 new sites to their network in the Philippines. As previously noted, strong growth was observed in third-party fuel volumes, with storage in the Southeast Asian region providing scope for our trading and shipping business to deliver strong returns on working capital in volatile market conditions. Turning now to slide 9. In 2020, we substantially completed the analysis of our retail network review, specifically around the outstanding cohort of sites identified as non-core in 2019. The network review has been a valuable exercise for shareholders, with the most important element being it has enabled management to focus on high-volume, privileged sites that have the capacity to deliver the most value for shareholders. And I believe you can see the EBIT delivery from our core network coming through in this result. As part of the network review process, we divested 25 higher-value sites, as previously disclosed, and closed 33 marginal sites in 2020, as communicated at our Investor Day in November. We have also transferred approximately 20 sites from the company-operated network to resellers in the broader branded Ampol network, reflecting a focus on wholesale fuel rather than retail at these sites. These changes reduced the size of our controlled network by 9% in 2020. We have also flagged today that approximately 20 further non-core sites are planned for closure in 2021, and we will continue to explore alternative avenues to maximise returns from the 80 remaining non-core sites as part of BAU activity, with a large number likely to be either closed or transferred to alternative operators over time. We have now deemed that the majority of these sites do not prove to be critical to the overall integrity of our branded network. It is important to note that this remaining cohort of non-core sites are largely a collection of marginal, smaller volume regional sites with minimal residual land value after factoring in remediation costs. These sites contribute negligible earnings to the group, and so the management of this tail over several years will have little impact on group earnings. When we step back from the initial identification of 240 non-core sites in our network in 2019, it is pleasing that through operational and cost improvements and adjustments to our fuel and shop offer, we have transferred a significant proportion of the original 240 non-core sites back into the core network. We'll continue to focus on the high-quality core of our company-operated network to deliver value for shareholders from the disciplined execution of our convenience strategy. An active focus on retaining and securing quality sites, as evident by the recent award of 4 New South Wales highway sites in 2020, will ensure that we retain Australia's leading fuel network. Now on to slide 10. The convenience retail result was strong in 2020, with improved performance in both fuel and shop, and the business reaching practical completion of the transition of franchise stores to company operations. Retail fuel margin strength was observable throughout the year from the publicly available AIP data, which reflected rational industry behaviour in the face of extreme demand destruction. We benefited through the strength of our privileged network and strong card offering, as well as a continued focus on premium fuels, which represented 51.3% of retail volumes in 2020, which was up 2 percentage points on 2019. Our total network shop sales increased 4% during the year, which is pleasing given the external disruptions experienced and 9% reduction in controlled network size. The strong momentum and execution of our retail strategy is evidenced through the 7% increase in like-for-like network shop sales in 2020, with strong growth in basket size reflecting ongoing improvement in our customer offer. We are seeing customers spend more time in their local areas, taking advantage of our convenience and range to meet their daily needs, with this trend being accelerated during COVID. Our ongoing focus on efficiency and enhancement of the customer offer is demonstrated by the $25 million increase in shop contribution margin in 2020, again achieved despite the reduced network size, which has helped sharpen our focus. We finished 2020 with 6 Metro pilot stores in the network, with the latest 4 reflecting lower cost and investment profiles and trading well, demonstrating the potential for the format across our core network. Thank you, and I'll now hand over to our interim CFO, Geoff Etherington, to discuss the financial results in more detail.
Thank you, Matt, and good morning, everyone. As Matt has outlined, COVID-19 demand destruction has had a significant impact on our 2020 financial result. The waterfall chart on slide 12 details how the pandemic has impacted the fuels and infrastructure result. F&I delivered total ARCOP EBIT of $154 million, down $296 million compared to 2019. The main driver of this lower result was a $145 million ARCOP EBIT loss at Lytton Refinery, the part of our business most adversely impacted by the pandemic. Lytton earnings were $215 million lower compared to 2019 as the result of exceptionally weak refiner margins, resulting in a negative $172 million impact. Lower volumes associated with the extended T&I resulting in an $89 million impact, and a $29 million cost to manage committed crude cargoes during the T&I, as highlighted at our half-year result. These headwinds more than offset favourable items, including non-repeat of the 2019 refinery outages and lower feedstock and input costs. F&I ex-Lytton delivered an RCOP EBIT result of $299 million, down $81 million compared to 2019. This is a resilient result given reduced hydrocarbon demand caused by COVID-19 and the resulting impact that loss of scale has on earnings from our integrated supply chain. Lower volumes from the pandemic reduced earnings by $68 million. In addition, COVID-related supply costs and variable demand pricing reduced earnings by a further $28 million. These pandemic impacts, combined with other factors including the non-repeat of trading and shipping gasoline earnings, called out as one-off in nature in our 2019 result, more than offset $13 million higher international earnings, ongoing cost discipline which delivered $12 million of reduced operating expenditure, and foreign exchange gains. While it is disappointing to see the significant step down in earnings, the business is well positioned for earnings recovery when volumes improve in line with economic conditions and government travel restrictions are eased on a more permanent basis, although this timing is uncertain, especially for aviation. Slide 13. As we've advised throughout the year, Lytton Refinery has been the part of our business most impacted by the pandemic, exacerbating what were already soft conditions arising from the impact of IMO 2020. Lytton refiner margin averaged $4.70 per barrel in 2020, with this reflecting a volume-weighted average of the previous methodology from first to third quarter, an amended methodology for fourth quarter 2020. LRM includes approximately $1 per barrel of other hydrocarbon costs. The extreme weakness in refining margins and the need to preserve cash flow, as well as the need to protect personnel on site and adhere to COVID-19 safety protocols, saw us accelerate and extend the Lytton T&I during this period of low margins, before safely bringing the refinery back online at the end of the third quarter. This action resulted in production of 3.5 billion litres in 2020, well below the 5.8 billion litres reported in 2019. We are continuing to progress the comprehensive review of Lytton Refinery announced in October 2020, and we remain focused on determining how to maximise value for shareholders from this highly strategic asset, with the review to be concluded by the end of the first half of 2021. We continue to engage proactively with the government on fuel security initiatives, and as we continue to work through our review, we formed the view that it would not be appropriate to accept the interim refinery support payments while we are still working out the best path forward for Lytton. Moving now to slide 14. Convenience retail delivered an RCOP EBIT result of $287 million in 2020, $86 million higher than 2019. The primary driver of this strong result was the $100 million benefit from higher retail fuel margins, assisted by the timing benefit from crude oil price declines. This more than offset the impact from lower volumes resulting from COVID-19 restrictions in place across Australia at various stages throughout the year. Shop contribution margin after site costs was $25 million higher than the prior corresponding period, with the strong performance in the second half reflecting continued disciplined execution of our convenience retail strategy with strong like-for-like sales growth and continual focus on cost control. 2020 was also supported by a $10 million improvement in cost of doing business, driven by a continued focus on cost discipline. Consistent with the first half 2020 result, the convenience retail result includes $13 million of other one-off non-cash expenses, which is a delta of $17 million compared to the 2019 result, given a $4 million benefit in that year. Our disciplined focus on improving return on capital employed across the retail network has resulted in closures of underperforming sites, divestment of sites for higher and better use, and continued investment in new sites with the right returns. This closure and divestment activity has prompted the site remediation and dismantling provision to be reassessed. The accounting impact is non-cash, and this decision has resulted in an asset and corresponding liability of $241 million being taken up on the balance sheet, the majority of which relates to convenience retail sites. This has also increased depreciation and amortization expense for convenience retail in 2020 by $26 million, although the increase is not observable in its entirety in the waterfall, as it is partially offset by $17 million of lower depreciation from the impairments of convenience retail sites booked at the first half-year result. As reflected in the D&A guidance provided in Appendix Slide 33, convenience retail D&A is expected to reduce in 2021 as the full-year depreciation benefit from the impairments taken in 20 is expected to exceed the increase in depreciation associated with the site remediation and dismantling asset. Turning to slide 15. Net borrowings, which excludes the present value of lease liabilities, ended the period at $434 million, below the $868 million net borrowings position at the end of 2019. This net borrowings number is, of course, prior to the completion of the $300 million off-market share buyback, which settled in February 21. As shown in the net borrowings waterfall chart, our business delivered resilient operating cash flow of $268 million during a period severely impacted by COVID-19-induced hydrocarbon demand destruction and the steep decline in crude and product prices in the first half of the year. Operating cash flow was supported by working capital benefits of $211 million. In response to the challenging environment, Ampol reduced capital expenditure to $227 million, including the T&I spend, with total capex down $43 million on the prior corresponding period. This was consistent with our commitment in the second quarter last year to bring capital expenditure below $250 million. Outside of resilient operating cash flow, the key contributor to the lower period-end net borrowings position was the completion of the Convenience Retail Property Trust transaction, which saw $655 million of net proceeds received in 2020 after tax, stamp duty and other transaction costs. Payment of ordinary dividends were $190 million during the period, and other investing and financing activities amounted to $72 million. Net debt, which includes the present value of future lease liabilities, totaled $1.35 billion at period end. The impacts stemming from the unprecedented economic and social disruption of the pandemic have been well managed through the actions we've taken across the business, enabling Ampol to maintain a strong balance sheet. Slide 16. Whilst considerable disruption occurred in 2020, and uncertainty remains around the profile of the economic recovery, our approach to capital allocation has remained both disciplined and consistent. Capital allocation is governed by our transparent framework to ensure we retain a strong balance sheet in order to support the execution of our strategy and the return of capital consistent with our focus on releasing franking credits to shareholders over time. On a pro forma basis, factoring in the capital returned to shareholders from the recently completed $300 million off-market share buyback, our leverage sits at approximately 1.7 times adjusted net debt to EBITDA, which is within our target range of 1.5 to 2 times on a last 12-month basis. 2021 will see a higher level of capital expenditure, around $100 million higher than 2020, as we ramp up our Ampol rebranding activity and spend more on value accretive growth initiatives. These initiatives will include spend on initial planning and approval works for the redevelopment of the four high volume New South Wales highway sites that we successfully tendered for in 2020. As Matt mentioned, we're proud of the progress we've made in 2020 on the strategic initiatives we have outlined. We had outlined at our 2019 Investor Day. In addition to increasing capital returns through the off-market share buyback, we demonstrated the value of our high-quality core freehold convenience retail network through the completion of the property transaction with the Charter Hall and GIC Consortium. We also successfully completed a $500 million hybrid issuance in the wholesale market, receiving 50% equity credit from Moody's Investor Service. Completed our existing $100 million cost-out program and announced a further $40 million in cost-out to be completed by 2022. I am proud of the delivery of a number of key strategic initiatives over the past year, particularly when considering the disruptions from the pandemic and the distractions caused by corporate takeover interest. I would like to thank the Ampol team for their efforts in 2020, which see us well positioned to build into 2021 and accelerate when markets recover. Slide 17. We remain committed to returning surplus capital and franking credits to shareholders in line with our capital allocation framework and business performance. We have a strong track record of capital return since 2015, with $2.4 billion of surplus capital returned, along with $1 billion of franking credits. This includes three off-market share buybacks, resulting in total shares on issue reducing by around 12%. Our most recent $300 million off-market share buyback involved the repurchase of 4.6% of issued capital and the return of around $119 million of franking credits to shareholders. Today, we also announced a final dividend of 23 cents per share, equivalent to a 60% of second half 2020 ARCOP NPAT. This brings our full-year dividend to 48 cents per share, fully franked, reflecting a 55% payout ratio, being within our guidance range of 50 to 70% of ARCOP NPAT, excluding significant items. Our full-year dividend reflects the underlying resilience of the Ampol business and our strong focus on balancing returns to shareholders while maintaining prudent balance sheet settings, consistent with a strong investment-grade credit rating and retaining the flexibility to invest in future value-accretive growth opportunities. Thank you, and I'll now hand back to Matt for closing remarks.
Thanks, Jeff. Moving to slide 19. In 2020, Ampol contributed almost $2.5 million to community organisations through the Ampol Foundation, which includes new partnerships launched with the Smith Family and Surf Life Saving Australia. We also continue to focus on our environmental goals with comprehensive TCFD scenario analysis to be released in the second quarter. Moving to slide 20, I'd like to provide a brief update on current market conditions. While green shoots are being seen in the economy, travel restrictions continue to impact Australian fuel volumes, especially in aviation, where over 75% of our 2019 volumes related to international flights. Given the continued impact of COVID-19 on demand, Ampol's current Australian volume expectations for 2021 are between 13.5 and 14 billion litres, with this forecast assuming a delayed recovery in jet fuel demand and a continued impact from domestic travel restrictions. The reality is that the sudden government lockdowns in response to COVID outbreaks, as experienced recently in the northern beaches of Sydney, Brisbane, Perth and Victoria, have a significant impact on our part of the economy. Although short in duration, they create significant disruption to activity levels and result in a lingering effect on confidence. Industry retail fuel margins in early 2021 are lower than the levels observed in the prior period as we work through a period of adjusting margins for higher crude oil pricing. Lytton production was significantly below normalised levels in 2020 as a result of the extended T&I. While this lower level of production impacted Lytton earnings in 2020, it resulted in increased product imports to meet demand requirements, which enhanced F&I Australia earnings. This make versus buy decision is an integral part of how we maximise value for shareholders from the integrated supply chain. And I note that increased production from Lytton will reduce the level of product imports in 2021 and the F&I Australia earnings associated with product imports. This highlights the importance of completing the review in a timely manner by the end of the first half of 2020. It is important to note that F&I earns significant income in foreign currency, and it will be negatively impacted if the current strength we're seeing in the Australian dollar relative to the US dollar continues. While the COVID-related headwinds of 2020 are yet to alleviate and the timing of recovery remains uncertain, we continue to focus on the controllables and delivering on our promises. We remain on track to deliver the targeted $195 million EBIT uplift by 2024 from SHOP, international and further cost out, so that we will emerge through an eventual recovery in volumes in a stronger and fitter position. Slide 21. While considerable uncertainty remains over the outlook for economic recovery, we have a clear set of priorities in 2021 to deliver value for our shareholders. We will successfully execute on our rebrand to Ampol, with a national rollout to achieve scale by the end of 2021. Our rollout has begun to gather momentum, with 44 sites in the branded network having been transitioned as at mid-February. The review of Lytton Refinery to determine the best path forward to maximise value for shareholders is ongoing and will complete by the end of the first half. We are focused on improving returns in F&I Australia through a disciplined focus on capital effectiveness and cost efficiency in the non-refining business, while also selectively pursuing strong returning investments. Continued effort will be made to deliver on our targeted $195 million EBIT uplift by 2024 relative to a base of 2019, with earnings growth targeted through improvements across our SHOP operations and a continued disciplined approach to format upgrades and the continued delivery of our F&I international strategy. This year will see us roll out 9 new Gull sites in New Zealand while we continue to target growth in international third-party sales, which will be supported by new customer wins secured for 2021. In addition, we will commence delivery of a further $40 million of cost savings on a run rate basis by 2022, as announced at our Investor Day in November. Finally, we remain committed to releasing our substantial franking credit balance to shareholders in accordance with our capital allocation framework, which actively allocates spare balance sheet capacity towards incremental returns or growth. Thank you for your time today, and we will now take questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Michael Simotas from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Got a couple of questions on the convenience retail business, and the first one is on the SHOP sales. So you saw a big acceleration in like-for-like SHOP sales, looks like about 10% like-for-like in the second half, and that's continued into 2021. Can you pull that apart for us, please, and just talk about how much of that you think is due to underlying improvements in the operations, and then how much of it's due to a better marketplace with food retail generally benefiting from COVID as well as the shift to convenience, etc.?
Yeah, I'll hand that one to Joe. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael, and good morning, everyone. So, Michael, it's a combination of both. There is no doubt that COVID has provided some beneficial tailwinds. As Matt talked to, we are seeing people shop more frequently in their local areas. The convenience of our site and the accessibility means that we've been able to capture that change in customer behaviour. But the reason why I say it's both is that we now, through rolling out the plan in a disciplined way over the past 2 years, have the capability to execute on it. So one, that comes through improved range. We are benefiting from the partnership with Woolworths in that compared to other convenience players, we do have a broad range and hence have been able to pick up the general grocery top-up shop across many of our sites. We also have seen improvements through our operations of the stores as we've now virtually completed the transition from franchise to company operations, and we're seeing the rollout of our labour standards across the stores meaning we're getting the right balance between operational execution and enhanced range to actually ensure that we deliver to the opportunity that exists. As you said, we've seen that continue into the first part of this year and plan to drive that further as we progress through 2021 and beyond. Thanks, Michael.
Okay, thank you. And then second question on convenience retail. It sort of looks like all of the drivers were very positive in the fourth quarter. You know, you had better fuel volumes, you had supportive retail fuel margins, you had strong shop sales, you had a gross margin tailwind in the shop, you had strong premium penetration. EBIT was lower in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter. I suspect the D&A may be part of the reason for that, but can you just talk us through what happened in the fourth quarter relative to the third quarter, and specifically around the depreciation associated with the impairment? Thanks.
Yeah, Michael, it's Geoff. I'll touch on the depreciation. So as we've outlined, we have taken an ARO, provisional remediation provision that relates to tank replacement and remediation of sites. And that's had results in an asset and liability of $241 million going onto the balance sheet. We begin depreciating that asset, and that's had an impact on the convenience retail result in the second half of a $26 million increase in depreciation. As we've highlighted a couple of times in the speech and throughout the pack, that is partially offset by depreciation benefit coming through as a result of the impairments, the $233 million asset impairments taken by convenience retail at the half year. That's $17 million. And then flows through to flipping around the other way, lower depreciation in convenience retail in 2021 versus 2020.
So, Michael, you saw strong performance, I think, in the underlying cash earnings through the shop in the fourth quarter due to the combination of drivers that you mentioned, but you did see $26 million of D&A related to this remediation and dismantling asset dismantling provision go through in the fourth quarter. You can see that was a higher bump, as Geoff mentioned, that impacts 2020. But in fact, on slide 33, when you look at the guidance for 21 around D&A for convenience retail, you can see that coming back down again.
Okay, so that's all in the fourth quarter. And the way to think about that going forward, I know you've given us guidance for D&A overall, but we should think about that $26 million as being permanent, but somewhat offset by the lower depreciation associated with the impairment on the asset.
Yeah, and I think as Geoff mentioned, that depreciation number for the remediation position will step down to approximately 15 in 21, and will be more than offset by the depreciation benefit, if you like, flowing from the impairments.
Yep, that's very clear. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Shaun Cousins from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, all. Just a question regarding Lytton. I'm just curious why Ampol wouldn't keep Lytton open until the end of June 21 to receive the money from the government. It just seems like a little bit of a lost opportunity for you just to delay the outcome of your review a few months and collect that money from the government. Can you just sort of provide the basis for that decision, please?
Yeah, so thanks, Sean. Look, as we communicated, I think at the end of last year, we felt that it wouldn't be appropriate to take the short-term support until we had concluded our review, which will conclude in the second quarter. To the extent that our decision was to continue operating the refinery, we'd absolutely be in discussions with government around short and longer-term support. But what we have said is that until we've completed the review, we don't think it's appropriate to take that money.
Okay. And maybe just sort of generally around how you're thinking about full year 21 volumes, thanks for the guidance, the 13.5 to 14 billion litres. How much are you assuming that jet volumes are in line with fiscal 21 at 1.2 billion litres? Because that seems to be the swing factor where we may be out. Or is there something else sort of that's playing on there? So maybe if you could sort of tell us how you're seeing jet for fiscal 21.
Jet's a very significant part of it. I think we've put in one of the appendix slides what the Q4 run rate looks like. Q4 run rate for jet was 1.1 billion litres. So you know, if you reflect back on 2019 and a comparison there, you've got a gap of about 1.6 billion litres. So jet's a very big proportion of it. And then there are other impacts, including convenience retail hadn't recovered back to full run rate in the fourth quarter. We do see that continuing to improve but it will be on a profile. We still haven't got back there, and as I mentioned in the call, we continue to see impacts from the prompt lockdowns year to date. So obviously they are short and sharp, but they do impact confidence as you look at the recovery profile flowing through. So that obviously gives rise to some uncertainty as well. And clearly, as you understand, there's a significant sort of link to retail, effective retail volumes in our wholesale supply through our reseller network, and those same factors apply through that business.
And maybe just quickly on retail fuel margins, given these snap lockdowns, it's a rational industry, but wouldn't you, I mean, for Joe, wouldn't you have expected retail fuel margins to better reflect the weaker volumes that you're getting out of these snap lockdowns? The industry did a very good job, say, in February last year, reflecting that. Is it a little disappointing that we haven't seen margins expand to what is an increasingly volatile and uncertain retail volume path, please?
Yeah, Sean, I think there's a couple of things to consider. One is, as you've touched on and Matt did, they are short and sharp. So they're literally a five-day shutdown we're seeing. And as you know, typically the metro pricing cycles take longer than that. The other factor, because we are, when you do look at ARP data, you see the impact on diesel at the moment. So there has been some increasing input costs that are a little bit different to what we saw at this time last year. So obviously having to work through those cost increases is probably also a secondary component beyond the snap lockdowns, particularly in relation to diesel.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks all.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mark Samter from MST Macquarie. Oh, sorry, pardon me, MST Marquee. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I don't think Macquarie's taken us over just yet. A question, if I can, on I guess how we think about, I mean, obviously the Lytton review is in tow, but if we look at a share price that's back down to $25, and obviously we had suitors coming in around the $35 mark, and they saw value above that with what they could create with the business. Can we think about the Lytton review being a platform for maybe some more structural changes you could think around the broader portfolio, and particularly when the share price is languishing down at the levels it currently is?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Look, there's no doubt that the Lytton review is quite fundamental to the company, and that's why, as we discussed in November, it's important that we take account of all the factors that we need to take account of in assessing what the right decision looks like. Clearly, we've seen BP and Exxon announce closures, and that gives rise to impacts in terms of the buy-sell or the refinery swap arrangements that are in place, which all sort of feeds into our review process. And so we're taking account of all of those factors, and we'll come up with our answer in the second quarter. So it's a critical piece of work. I think we were clear on our timeline. We're on track, and we were clear that we're taking account of a broad range of factors in coming to the decision that will maximise value for our shareholders.
And I mean, just around that, can you just provide everyone with a little bit more clarity? You allude, I think, in the presentation to that. There's obviously been the volumes lost, which, I mean, there was a public announcement, whatever it was, 5 or 6 years ago about supplying BP. So one assumes that's the BP volumes. Just the financial impact on Lytton from having now lost those volumes?
Yeah, look, I think, as I mentioned, buy-sell does play an important role in our business. The closure of refineries, we've seen two announcements already, as I mentioned, do lead to a reset as, you know, Perth's becoming an import market. BP have started importing in Brisbane. Exxon now, we need to see what their next steps are. And so you are going to see a resetting of those arrangements right around the country, which has impacts in terms of, one, what our import business or our trading and shipping business looks like across the country, and two, has implications for the refining business, of course.
And, I mean, in a rational market, those kind of things might lead to consolidation of infrastructure as well. Is that just wishful thinking, or do we think that is a realistic outcome in how this all plays out?
No, I think it's important that as an industry, supply chains are as efficient as they can be to ensure that customers ultimately get the best possible deal and shareholder value is maximised. And what we can't see is or shouldn't see is infrastructure being built where it doesn't need to. So that should drive a range of discussions around around sensible infrastructure cooperation.
Perfect. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Errington from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, team. Matt, this question probably is to Joe. One part of the result I was really pleased with was the increase in the shop contribution margin of $25 million. I note, I think, if you correct me if I'm wrong, but that first half, that contribution margin was zero. So you've actually been able to generate a $25 million pickup in the second half. Now, I don't know what EBIT sales numbers that would be, but that shows that you're running it well above 10%. Now, I understand there are tailwinds, but that to me, that's, you know, correct me if I'm getting a little bit too optimistic and too bullish, but your run rate on an annual basis is a shop margin of about 50 million EBIT. And that's the high margin part of the business or the high multiple part of the business. So Joe, is that right, those sorts of numbers? What's driving that? Is it basically gross margin improvements? Are you getting your costs right? What is actually driving that increase, $25 million? Because that, to me, is probably, to me, the highlight of the whole result. Because given that it's for half a year, you did nothing in the first half, it shows that you're really getting this right. And given that you were aiming, I think, for $85 million by 24, well, you're more than halfway there by the end of 20. So, Joe, can you give a bit more colour on what really drove that $25 million? So, we can get a bit more of an understanding as to the sustainability going forward, because that to me looks like a terrific part of the result.
Yeah, sure. Good morning, David. So a couple of factors coming together to drive the performance. Only moderate gross margin expansion, so it's actually the improvement is through the growth in the top line, and that's largely in the second half. We saw our traditional customer return, so growth in beverages, tobacco, and also our focus on fresh and coffee really helping drive top-line sales. So that is driver number one. The second component is much better cost control. So we talked about the 2019 Investor Day, again in 20, the work we were doing across improving the range but also improving our execution at a store level. We worked with the Connors Group to engineer labour standards, and the reality of the demand destruction that COVID caused meant we executed those faster than we probably otherwise would, because we were forced to in a situation where trading was quite difficult. That paid dividends in the second half as well. There are some other, so largely labour and top line growth are the two big drivers. There's also some things that were a little bit different, which is why I still have a level of continuing to execute in a disciplined way, and us demonstrating it this year and beyond is important, David, because also with COVID were some other tailwinds, so some reductions in card fees and the like that helped improve that cost as well. Some of those obviously can return. So it's a combination of some tailwinds, but in truth, and congratulations to the whole team who have been executing the strategy across the past 2 years to get our operations at a store level better.
But I'm comparing the same thing, Joanna. That was the number that you targeted, 85, and your run rate at the moment is about 50. That's right, isn't it? That's the number that you... I'm comparing apples to apples there, aren't I?
If I'm understanding you correctly, David, yes, happy to talk directly to you a bit further about it, but yes, that is. And when we've talked to the 85 back in 19, which we said is a comparable, there was a large component of that 85 that was actually due to running the business better before we also looked to enhancements in EBIT through new formats with Metro and the like.
Well done, Joe. As I said, I didn't think you'd get any, so you're doing a great job. I've been proven completely wrong on that, so well done on that. Can I sneak one question in on F&I? Matt, I don't know if you, but the F&I OPEX savings, again, the run rate hasn't improved in the second half. It's still running at 12 million. I'm a bit surprised, given the drop in the volume, you wouldn't have gone a bit harder on the F&I OPEX savings.
Yeah, thanks, David. I might hand over to Andrew Brewer to talk about where we're focused in terms of F&I OPEX.
Hi, David. Andrew Brewer speaking.
Hi, Andrew.
So F&I OPEX is certainly a focus for us in terms of efficient operation and making best use of our assets. So the whole spread of opportunities is there across operating costs, maintenance costs, and capital investment. So that is the focus. That's a continuing and a high-profile activity for us during this year.
Okay, it's just that there's no improvement in the second half. I mean, it's just flat at 12. I was just surprised it wasn't seeing much of a pickup.
Well, during the second half of 2020, remember the refinery resumed operation in at the end of the third quarter.
Okay.
And with the completion of the extended T&I.
Yep.
And so there were some operating costs that you saw reduced during the T&I period, which then effectively resumed in refining operation. And as I said, the focus on ex-Lytton operating costs continues and is progressively delivered.
Okay.
We recognised this when we announced at the Investor Day. We were targeting a further $40 million of cost out across the F&I Australia and corporate parts of the business. And so those plans, including the rationalisation of our distribution network, continue to be a significant focus area for us.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Grant Saligari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning and thank you. Matt, historically the presence of a refinery in a market has led to greater market share from a commercial wholesale perspective. Can you talk us through some of the, swings and roundabouts for you in terms of the closure of the Melbourne Perth Kwinana refineries and sort of the potential impact, I guess, if Lytton were to close from a sort of a market share point of view for Ampol?
Yeah, thanks, Grant. So as I mentioned earlier, clearly we've seen two refinery closure announcements already, and that triggers change right across the buy-sell or the refinery swap arrangements. And it's how that network of arrangements play out that do feed back into the equation of refining viability. So, for instance, if BP moving to import in Brisbane reduces the size of our market position in Queensland, as you say. We need to work through what the arrangements are with Exxon. So those arrangements will be reset right around the country. They're always reset, but obviously as refineries close, there's a more substantial reset, if you like, that needs to take place at the moment, and that does have implications for the refinery.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is from where you sit at the moment, Ned, is this more likely than not to be a benefit to you, or is this more likely to be a headwind?
Well, I think when you look at when you look at buy sell, there's two parts to the equation, of course. So where you lose the volume on one side, you then have a position that you've got to decide how you want to liberate on the other side. So where you currently take from a refinery that may be closing. So take Perth and Melbourne as those examples for our business based on the announcements that have been made. I think when we sit back and look at our position, and as we said at the Investor Day in November, clearly it's important that we've got the necessary refining infrastructure strength, if you like. When those markets such as Perth are moving to to be a full import market. And we're also confident that over the last 5 or 6 years, we've built a strong trading and shipping business in Singapore. And so we do have the capacity to look at options to continue to develop that business on the buy side, if you like.
Okay, that's helpful. And sorry, just a little more prosaic on the outlook guidance for the domestic volume. The bridge from the annualisation of the 4Q, the 13.3, to your sort of guidance of 13.5 to 14, what are the major components of that bridge? So, for example, what are you assuming in terms of the retail volumes into 2021? Because you've got site closures on the one hand, but then you probably would need to assume some improvement off the Q4 base in terms of volume per site. So could you just in broad terms talk us through the bridge from the annualisation of the Q4 volume to the guidance that you're given on volume?
Yeah, so I will roughly. Look, if you look at Jet's a significant gap, as I mentioned. That's approximately, if you take Q4 run rates, about 1.1 billion litres. You've then got retail. So retail was around a run rate in Q4 of around 4.4 billion litres. So still not, about 400 million litres short on 2019. Around a third of that, I would say, relates to network reduction, and the balance sort of relates to recovery profiles. And we continue to see the short, sharp lockdown. So at one end or the lower end of the equation, we continue to see those play through the year. At the other end, we continue to see good recovery coming through in those volumes as there's some more coordination from a national cabinet point of view in terms of how those outbreaks are managed. And then we've got also a retail-linked wholesale fuel reduction flowing through, so our reseller networks and the impact that they see flowing through their businesses as a result of the same sort of COVID implications. So they're the factors. Obviously, at the bottom end of our guidance range, we see some recovery from Q4, some continued recovery from Q4 run rate. Not a lot in Jet, but not a lot in Jet. And then at the upper end of the guidance range, we're seeing a stronger recovery in our wholesale volumes and our convenience retail volumes.
All right. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Daniel Butcher from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Just want to start off with a question or two about F&I. Can you guys talk a bit more about the US dollar exposure or non-A-dollar exposure in your F&I business, both across Lytton and Ampol Trading, and just how that sort of feeds into the $40 million headwind on FX that you've disclosed today?
Sure, it's Jeff. I'll start with that, and if Brent wants to build, he can. So, look, the main there are three main components of FX exposure. So, obviously the Lytton refiner margin in US dollars is adversely impacted by a rising Australian dollar. Then we have various price timing exposures across the F&I supply chain as we bring US dollar denominated fuel in country. And then, of course, parts of the business do earn US dollar earnings that needs to come back to Australia ultimately.
Right, okay. And excluding the refining margin, which is pretty obvious, how much would you say of the last two, what's the sort of split there between the impact? Is it relatively larger in one than the other?
Yeah, look, it's the larger proportion would come from the US dollar earnings. But, we don't disclose those earnings, so I'm not going to go into specifics around the sensitivity.
Okay, no problem. I just had a sort of visit an old question on the refining subsidy. Matt or Jeff, do you feel like giving us a bit of a tone of the flavour? Has the urgency jumped since the Altona announcement in terms of engagement with the government? Is there any sort of interesting discussions around the structure of such payments? And I guess a sub-question is, will Altona closing reduce your crude input costs if you keep Lytton open with more local crude available for feedstock?
Yes, I'll take the first one and might hand to Brent for the second part of that, Dan. Look, we continue to be in active dialogue with government in terms of, I think, the short-term payment arrangements are quite clear to everyone. In terms of the longer-term approach, the government continues to work very actively, and we're engaged with them in those discussions, and we expect in the coming weeks to have some further insight into exactly what that mechanism might look like, and the government has said it would like to have it in place by the start of July, which means certainly over the next month or so there would be more visibility as to what that might look like that would factor into our review exercise. In terms of the impact on local crude procurement, I might hand over to Brent.
Thanks, Matt, and thanks, Daniel, for the question. Yeah, I guess time will tell. Unfortunately, it's a competitive process for crude. I think your logic is sound that you know, fewer refining barrels needed with the Victorian refinery status means that there is an opportunity to access that crude, but how that turns out in the commercial negotiations later, I don't think I'll try and predict that, but so later on, in a number of months' time, I guess we'll find out that impact.
Right, thanks, guys. Just one last quick one, if I can. I just noticed you've cut your number of goal sites you're installing this year from, I think it was 11 or 12, down to 9. I'm just curious whether there's any reason for the slowdown there, or is it just a timing issue from this year to the following year? And just maybe as well, you're still aiming for about 1,000 sites for sea oil by 2024, or has that one been changed?
That remains the case for sea oil. For Gull, no change to pipeline. It's really just judgment around DA approval timelines. Dan.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Adam Martin from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Just on the rebranding, perhaps you could touch there. Just you've done about 26 sites to date. Are there any trends regarding fuel or food at those sites versus the rest of the Caltex sites, please?
Hey Adam, it's Joe. It is still early stages, so really the comment I think I made at Investor Day last year holds, so that what we have seen in the small number of sites that we did at the end of last year is that volume is holding and working through, you know, communicating to our customers the transition. Given the Christmas period, we didn't continue rebranding sites through the January period and now have recommenced that in earnest in February with over 40 sites that will land in this month. So really, as we head into the next 3 months of trade across those sites, we'll be more informed and share insights and the like. But at this point in time, it's really focusing on that transition, making sure we're preparing our teams well, the communications we have to our customers, as we accelerate the rollout.
Okay, thank you. And just on the potential Puma transaction for that terminal in WA, you've previously disclosed that. Just any thoughts on timeline, either whether you're successful or someone's not, obviously with BP closing their refinery, you know, having an import facility might be more important.
So we remain in discussions around that opportunity and looking at a range of options that we have in Perth that would give rise to an import solution. As I mentioned earlier, we are able to leverage the trading and shipping capability that we've built up, and we're looking at a range of alternatives and pretty focused on ensuring that there's appropriate berth access across industry as we look to put in place an import solution in Perth.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Gordon Ramsay from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Just following up on the buy-seller arrangements, just trying to understand whether you look at this situation that's developed as potentially a net benefit, or is it something else? I mean, if you look at the cost of importing fuel into the country versus buy-sell arrangements you have in place, what's your preliminary view on how this is going to play out?
Well, I think that's quite fundamental to one of the elements of the review we're working our way through, Gordon. It is an important sort of reset of the dynamic right across the different geographies, essentially. There are obviously two sides of a buy-sell, and the implications on the different geographies are different, where BP's decision, Exxon's decision will, you would expect, give us the opportunity to consider import solutions in those markets. But equally, those volumes more than likely exit on the sell side. Of course, that's a very high level summary, and there's a range of discussions as to how buy sell might reset that need to take place.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Byrne from Citi. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. So I was glad to see you reiterate today the EBIT uplift guidance of $195 million. Just wanted to understand a little bit, like you've called out a couple of headwinds here around, you know, FX, and I think financial markets generally expect over the next few years that the US dollar will continue to weaken, particularly versus commodity exposed currencies like the Australian dollar, foregone sales to BP in Brisbane, and yet SHOP is outperforming, as Aero mentioned earlier, and international seems to be shooting the lights out. I just want to understand, when you think about setting guidance like that $195 million, is there enough conservatism baked into that guidance to be able to absorb headwinds like the Aussie dollar and like changes in competition in Queensland, for example?
Good question, James. No, the 195 is very much focused on what we control in those parts of the business to which the 195 relates. So it relates to our SHOP performance, which, as you say, is showing strong momentum. It relates to our international business, which 18% up, 20 on 19, is demonstrating strong momentum, and our ongoing focus on cost out, as I mentioned. There are a range of other variables within the business around recovery profiles for volume, what happens to FX, et cetera, that we're not factoring into that 195.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Baden Moore from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for the question. I was just wondering if there was any update or next steps, timing on your legal processes with EG and Chevron. And I was wondering, do you need to have those resolved ahead of making your conclusions on the strategic review of Lytton?
There's not really too much I can say on those. In answer to the last part of your question, no. But in terms of the respective litigations, they're in front of the courts. As we said in our announcement in December, we consider the EG proceedings to be baseless, and we'll work them through and strongly defend them through the court process. And as far as the Chevron proceedings, equally, they'll work their way through the court process, and we consider our position to be strong. We're getting on and proceeding with our rebranding process, as Joe mentioned earlier, and we've got some good momentum there. So that's about all I can say on either of those matters.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Scott Ryall from Rimmer Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much. Two quick ones, if I can. The first one is, this is Jeff has presented in August and now as the interim CFO. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit more colour as to the process around putting in place a full-time CFO, please.
Yes, so there's an external process that's coming to a conclusion, and there'll be a resolution on the appointment of a permanent CFO imminently.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Halliday for closing remarks.
Thank you very much, everyone, for taking the time. As mentioned, I think it's a resilient result given the challenges faced in 2020, and we've got a clear set of priorities to continue to deliver value for shareholders in 2021 and beyond. Thanks for your time, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.